a drive along Detroit's Trumbull Avenue in 1981. A young mother in the depths of the Depression. A backyard ice rink of a boyhood home. Those are just a few of the stories that poet Michael Laughlin explores in his new collection, Trumbull Avenue. Laughlin brings a wide range of work and life experiences to his writing. He's lived in and around Detroit, he's a builder, and he's currently an English teacher at University of Detroit Jesuit High School. Cindy recently sat down with Laughlin and talked to him about his new collection.
Good to have you with us, Michael. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Is there an overarching theme that unites these poems in Trumbull Avenue?
I think my preoccupation is with the lives of a place. And I think the job of a poet is to let a place speak. And I think it's been that way for thousands of years. So that's my preoccupation. And Trumbull Avenue is a place that, because of Day House, because of the Catholic Worker, because of the soup kitchen, and because of our community work, was at the core of where I was in the 1980s, and many of the poems reach back to that.
They do, they do. And in fact, take us a little more into that history that you just referenced, Day House, and I think for people who are not from Detroit and maybe aren't as familiar with the kind of work that had been done.
Well, Day House is a shelter for women. It is a shelter that was opened in the spirit of the Catholic Worker. It's named for Dorothy Day. It is staffed by Tom Lumpkin, diocesan priest. It was started by a community of people who were actually inspired by the teaching of Daniel Berrigan, along with the writing of Dorothy Day. So it's been there since the 70s, and it's very familiar to the folks on the street.
Yeah,
there's Mass there every Sunday night, which is also a free meal. So.
And your earlier collections of poetry are Sudden Parade and The Mind Goes to Pieces, and also telling stories about Detroit and about its people. Is this kind of a continuum of those earlier two, or are you going off maybe into a different direction as you want to tell these Detroit-centric stories?
I think, first of all, I would give a tremendous amount of credit to Annie Martin, the acquisitions editor at Wayne State Press, for making a coherent collection here. It's certainly is a continuation of the work I've been doing all along. It's just taken an exceptionally long time to get this collection of poems together, and Annie was a great help in doing that.
How much time is invested in this? I mean, can you give a sense of how long it took you to...
Oh, very good. There are poems in here that go back a couple decades, and time itself is really one of the major themes of the book, the kind of mysterious nature of it, the way that a poem brings it together in a moment, but actually draws together many years. The poem Trumbull Avenue, for instance, has a year as part of it, 1981, which is 70 years after the Armenian genocide. And there was an Armenian cleaner on Trumbull Avenue who was still living in that moment. And so time is terrifically important to me as a theme in poetry.
And with that in mind, I'm going to ask you to read the first poem of the book, Trumbull Avenue, 1981.
Thank you very much. Trumbull Avenue, 1981. The bounding dog may have been a Dane. Memory does not retain the breed, save that his large frame bulged with muscles, and he ran with the happy grace of athletes, beyond praise and blame and score. The sun hammered that broad anvil of Detroit, the squinting hookers, the wan wild kids up from Tennessee, black kids one step from Alabama, the old Armenian who ran the cleaners, who still wept for dead parents and his young bride 70 years after. As for me, strange to waken each day into the same life, or now into the sequel of the story, I stood half blind from cooked concrete and flashing windshields near the burned apartment where a kid had been killed and others sniffed or shot or swallowed whatever they could, and fell into some drastic sleep. The dog came from a side street chasing a mate, or just running from sheer canine joy, the old Ford invisible to him as God's fist, poised on the ruined hood, a most sudden sculpture. He died fast.
That is Michael Laughlin reading from his latest collection, Trumbull Avenue. Do you remember when you first discovered poetry?
Perhaps in high school. I attended U of D Jesuit.
Where you teach now.
Where I now teach, right. The cycle is becoming complete. And then I remember in Ferndale picking a book off the shelf and going home and absorbing first Dylan Thomas and then later W.S. Merwin. And I think I fell in love with those poems. And I think that's what every writer is asking a reader to do, is to enter in, to fall in love, to find oneself in the work.
And when did you begin writing?
I was writing then very, very badly. I heard a poet say recently that everyone has 200 bad poems in him and just has to get past those. So I've thrown thousands away. I was certainly writing then. And then I ended up at what was Goddard and then later the Warren Wilson writing program, which was great for me because I was working and I was already married and having kids.
Has your idea of what poetry is changed over the years since you've begun writing poems?
I think it has come into a kind of focus. I've had some really wonderful teachers, you know, people like Alan Voigt and Tom Lux. Larry Pike, who was here in the Detroit area, was very important to me. He was passed away 20 years ago. And these are all folks who kind of become part of your own voice and become integrated into the way that you see. Poetry shapes our eyes, actually, and our ears, so that we take the world in differently. And those are all writers who have done that for me.
How do you measure success as a poet?
One person listening. Osip Mandelstam, the great Russian poet, talked about the interlocutor, the idea that there's an ideal reader that the writer is trying to speak to in an intimate voice, not a bombastic voice. Whitman saw a whole theater full of people that he was talking to, and that works for some people. But usually poetry is a much more intimate kind of conversation. So really, if one person is moved by something, the joy of having a collection out is that there are more people to be that one person, you know, to enter into it. But one reader.
How do you begin to clearly capture a sense of place as you sit down to write a poem?
I don't know. I think I have. Sometimes you get a little gift, an image connects to another. How does memory work? I think the cognitive psychologists can explain that better than the poets. But certainly it has to do with memory, it has to do with sound, and it has to do with the sensory images of a place. But places are inhabited by people, and people have stories. So there's always a little bit of narrative.
You've grown up in Detroit. You've worked in Detroit not only as a teacher but in many, many jobs in building trade. What does the city feel like to you now?
Oh, I think when we were kids, we used to watch a television show called The Naked City. There are a million stories in The Naked City, a deep voice would say at the beginning of every episode. I think Detroit is not just one story, and it's not just one storyteller. There's a great deal of loss, and there's also rebirth, and it's all happening at the same time. Our kids, we have our youngest is living in Southwest Detroit, and working with Southwest Solutions, and doing very exciting work, and encountering folks who are in some need in terms of education and in terms of sometimes material want. But there's a great deal of growth happening downtown. It's not just the economic excitement. It's also the way that a city can pull together. I think our community is drastically in need of compassion at this point. We have a real hunger for it, as we do across America. And I think if you want to identify a theme in the work, I would hope that would be something that would come out.
I'm going to ask you to end by reading us Detroit Pheasant. Before you do, can you kind of set it up for us? What is the story?
In my work in the trades, I found myself among a great deal of a great many workers, some of whom were building things and others were deconstructing things. Brickers sometimes were taking apart abandoned buildings and salvaging. But we're also watching kind of the return of the forest. You know, Southeast Michigan is a forest, and the return of wildlife. Nature is resilient, and when we let up on it for a couple of minutes, it shows signs of rebirth. So in Southwest Detroit and many parts of the community, you see pheasants returning to places where they're very comfortable. Thank you. I think this is the source of the cover. Yeah. Detroit pheasant. From a window, the boss calls to us where we load his truck with bricks. Turn around, fellas. Look. A pheasant wades through the brown grass across the street, vanishing and emerging from the tangle. A shed leans near a phone pole. Bumpers glint from the weeds. Blocks from the old foundation angle through the earth. The pheasant paces his courtyard. We have killed the city which lived here. The hieroglyph of its streets and rails has joined the ancient lost tongues. Buds unfold on a dwarf maple. A rooster hollers.
Beautiful. Detroit poet Michael Lachlan, latest collection of his poetry is entitled Trumbull Avenue. It was wonderful to meet you, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cynthia. It's great to be here.